This is Rebecca Lowe, or Rebecca Lua, if you listen to Suboptimal Radio, and you are listening to Men in Blazers on the NBC Sports Network.
It's unbelievable!
From the Embassy Row studios in the crap part of Soho, it's the Men in Blazers podcast, Rog.
Oh, for a change, a deeply sad.
It's our post-FA Cup special.
It's also
special.
Our David Bowie RIP podcast, David.
Oh, yeah.
What'd they say here? David Bowie.
Bowie. Yeah.
What a bloke, David. Bowie, what a life. What a death.
Yeah, an amazing life, Rog. All starting in South London. South London, I should say. It's one of my own, Rog. Don't know who his football team were.
Well, I've seen photos of him with a Crystal Palace scarf in his dressing room.
Well,
unfortunately, a couple of people have also sent one of them with a Chelsea scarf, which I wanted to leave out of this podcast, but I feel a duty to. But we put up on our Instagram a beautiful photo of him with his 1957 school soccer team. Looks adorable. You have no sense of everything that would be to come. It's hard.
What a life, though. What a life.
And what a death. What a way to go. Not telling the world.
That's so you. It's so dropping, you to focus, because that's how you'll want to go.
Dropping an amazing meditative piece of work and then passing away on your birthday.
Yeah, the day, it's your dream.
It's, you know, I'd like to be bitten by the Brazilian walking spider. That's honestly my dream
way
to get given a choice. But we don't get a choice about these things.
No, we don't.
But we do get a choice of how to live.
Yeah.
And his persona, his many personas, and his music, all the lyric, all about being an outsider, a misfit, an oddity, an explorer in every sense of the word, a drifting astronaut. I can't describe how incredibly validating it was to listen to him and to see him and to watch him and think about him in the 1970s and 80s in Northern England, where you had to wear a school uniform every day and conformity and doom were really the two life options that were on offer.
It's interesting because he sort of came from this in-between era in music, Rog. It was sort of post the Beatles, when the Beatles sucked up everything. And we've talked about this before, that I never realised how big the Rolling Stones were until I came to America. And then, suddenly it was the Beatles and the Rolling Stones. But it was all the Beatles sucked up almost everything in the 60s and early 70s. And then later on in the 70s, of course, it was New Wave and punk, which really sort of dominated. In that sort of middle period, that sort of glam pop, glam rock period, David Bowie kind of defined what a musical artist was and just kept going and going through every era, through every musical style. And he just owned every single one of those personas.
But like the Beatles, he was one of those performers who you don't fully understand the meaning of unless you know how he changed the world and unless you knew what the world was like before him. I mean, you can draw a straight line from him all the way through. I mean, parts of Mick Jagger's persona, Duran Duran, Lady Gaga, St. Vincent. I've really spent the morning listening to Someone Great, the LCD Sound System song, reliving the moments of my childhood and realizing most of them have a David Bowie soundtrack, David.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, we can be heroes. Do you know that there are always, and I'm sure you had this at your school and at your university, that you could spot the David Bowie fans like a mile. There's always one person who tries to inhabit the persona and personality of David Bowie, who listens to all the music, who dresses a bit like him, who moves, who will always be in the corner, a little bit moody and angular at the party.
Yeah. I've been trying to do that for the past 20 years. The Thin White Duke, have
yeah,
you not
exactly. But it's the image sometimes gets in the way. When you actually just listen to the music, I mean, Heroes, that song, Rog, which was the soundtrack to so much of my life, that song was always the go-to song to put you in a good mood when you're on a road trip, when you're around your very, very best mates.
Oh, the football blogger, Arseblog,
yeah,
who many of our listeners know is one of the great unintentional commentators
yeah,
of Arsenal's football coverage on NBC. He wrote a beautiful appreciation of Bowie this morning. He said, the word genius is banded about rather too easily this day. He said, some bastard backheels a fluky goal and he's a genius and it's genius. Nonsense. David Bowie, though, was the true measure of the word, a man whose work and art spanned five decades, a man who, like all of us, had his ups and downs, but those downs were never enough to taint the truly great stuff that he did. I've been thinking a lot, Dave, about life and death this week. I read a book, Gratitude, by Oliver Sacks, who talks about living a life that is intentionally full of content. I've been thinking a lot about death. I read an essay, actually, about a man, a lot of you have sent it in, a man called Dudley Marjorie Banks the First. You may know him better as the first Baron of Tweedmouth, a.k.a. Lord Tweedmouth,
yep.
Which is possibly the most English name of all time. It certainly puts Danny Drinkwater to shame. But he was a businessman.
Yep.
He was a politician. He loved hunting dogs. He loved sporting dogs.
Yep.
And he decided, I think this must have been in like the 18th century, he decided to crossbreed a wavy-coated retriever and a Tweed water spaniel.
Yeah.
Lord Tweedmouth, Davo, is the man who invented, Davo, the golden retriever. Oh.
That's an amazing contribution to the world.
I didn't know they could be invented. I thought I'd just assume they were like biblically part of the 7-day cycle that God did when he did all that. She did all that crap. But in Israel, there's an old graveyard where, on the banks of the Kinneret, the Galilee, where all the, like, the people who originally helped found the state, and I mean all the people, they're all kind of buried in there. It's quite a beautiful spot. Like, there's a husband and wife. Her great contribution was to work out how to bring honeybees and breed them in the country.
Uh-huh.
And on the back of her grave, there's like a honeycomb carved in there. Her husband, I'm pretty sure he brought palm trees. They weren't indigenous. He brought them in. They're now everywhere.
Uh-huh.
And on the back of his grave, he's got palm trees, Dave, carved on in there.
Yeah.
I keep thinking, what would you like to be carved on the back of your grave?
Do you know, I've actually said this before, that I am... You know, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? The game show was such a big hit. I sort of feel that it's going to be my life's work making sure that in my obituary, and it won't be widely read, it's not like it's going to be in the big papers, but in the smaller, perhaps the entertainment press, who may cover my obituary one day, I'm trying to spend the rest of my career preventing game show producer being the first three words in my obituary. I've thought about that quite a lot. But I think mainly what I want to be remembered for is the man that prevented my great friend and partner, Rog, jumping off a building in the crap part of Soho when Everton lose a penalty shootout in the Capital One Company Cup to Liverpool.
Oh, we'll talk about that, David. God willing, we'll get that far. I think on the back, I'd like a bald head to be carved, just the top of a bald head.
Yeah.
I'd like to be known as a man who was at one with baldness and represented his people well, David. Yeah,
the balds.
Yeah, the balds, David. I mean, if anything, Bowie's death has made me appreciate the way here in America... You actually work out a way to celebrate people and honour them while they're still alive. I got very caught up in the Baseball Hall of Fame induction of Ken Griffey Jr.
Yeah.
You're a fan of Hall of Fames?
I like a Hall of Fame. I must say, I am a fan of what you just said. It does occur to me, I've been to a lot of funerals recently, way too many funerals, and it does occur to me that you're basically gone. It doesn't really matter how you're remembered. You're not there to enjoy it. What you're here on this earth to do is to enjoy your actual life, not the memory of your life, which you cannot participate in. And however great your life was, however well you're remembered, the people that love you are devastated when you pass. And so however well you did, it doesn't make any difference. So I like a Hall of Fame. I like people being honored when they're still alive. And I like any ceremony that involves a blazer.
Oh, damn. Full on in this blazing, but something about Ken Griffey Jr. It's like it was an incredible moment of wonder for me, and also recent nostalgia. Great man,
yeah.
I mean, one of the first great baseball series I watched when I came over here, the 1995 ALDS between the Mariners of Ken Griffey Jr., Edgar Martinez, Tino Martinez, the two Martinez. I remember they're so different, their personas. Alex Rodriguez, back when he was lovely. And the greatest baseball player of all time, Joey Cora. Come on, Hall of Fame. When are you going to bring Joey Cora in there? Mm-hmm. And the Yankees. It was the Marineros against the Jenkies, as they called them in my Chicago neighborhood. And it's amazing to me that that game, that series, was a Hall of Fame career ago, Dave. Time is moving.
Why do we not have a Premier League Hall of Fame? We've got to call Scudamore and suggest the Premier League Hall of Fame. Blazers, an event. It's time to induct some of these guys in. Ravinelli.
We need to get Bob,
Zola.
We need to get Bob Lee on that.
Cantona.
Somebody tells me he would
Premier
be an
League Hall of Fame.
Incredible host. Let's start building. Where would it be, David?
The Premier League.
Somewhere outside of Stoke. Somewhere scenic outside
Sunderland.
Of Stoke.
Villa.
By the way, talking about...
Arlo, it could be at Arlo's house. That'd be good. We'll do it. We'll do it in Arlo's back garden.
I'll tell you, it's more likely to be built somewhere in America.
Uh-huh.
The way the viewing figures are going over here. But talking about great lives lived well. I did enjoy Kanye West's tweet. Something filled me with happiness.
Yeah.
When he said, I have no interest in working with anyone who's too important or too good or too traditional to take a call at 3 a.m. in the morning.
Wow.
That's a life well lived, David.
It is, very true.
And I agree 100%, especially because 3 a.m. is normally when our show ends on NBCSN now.
It's very, very true, when it's on early. Okay, Rog, we have a packed show today. We're going to break down all this weekend's FA Cup action. Feign enthusiasm.
It was fantastic.
Okay, good. We're going to get a match report on Man United.
FA Cup
action. I'm trying to sometimes I have to persuade myself to be really excited. We're going to get a match report on Manchester United's unspeakably dull 1-0 win against Sheffield United from Men in Blazers Manchester bureau chief, Charlie Isered. The Guardian writer and invincible author Amy Lawrence joins us for a temperature check on top of the table Arsenal ahead of a very busy Premier League week. Plus, a big day for US soccer at the Ballon d'Or.
To the football, Davey.
Yep, the Premier League takes a break for the magic of the FA Cup, a tournament that doubles as America's tour guide to such exotic locales as Wickham, Doncaster and Hartlepool. Oh, crack open your Guinness, Rog. Oh, sounds extra good today. Sounds extra, extra good.
It's kind of blonde. Oh, Davey, to the FA Cup. I too am trying to feign excitement for a tournament in which, well, really, the League Two sides had their way with Premier League teams.
Pretty much.
Best league in the world. I had Rebecca Lowe withdrawal this weekend,
you
David.
Did.
I felt like this was a really preparation for when baby Rob Lowe.
Maternity leave.
Yeah, for when baby Rob Lowe popped out there. I mean, even more than when it's an international weekend for some reason, I felt sadder this weekend. And I realised that the FA Cup, it's like trying to feast on dietetic chocolate.
It's I love dietetic.
You just know
chocolate.
However much you eat, it's just not going to be even mild. You do love it.
I love, well, no, not diet. I like rice chocolate. I don't know if that's dietetic. I like rice chocolate. Enjoy it more than regular chocolate.
Oh, I find it so
should
sad.
Put some of that in the Emporium, Lexi.
Not the dietetic chocolate. I find the FA Cup so sad.
Yeah.
We say this every year at this time. In our childhood, the FA Cup was the most magical of football tournaments.
Well, it was only football that was on. That, the home internationals.
Yeah,
there used to be a home international tournament, by the way, which was amazing. And then they stopped
home internationals,
that.
Meaning every year England, Ireland, Scotland, and
Northern Ireland and Wales
would play
remember
each
them.
Other.
They'd always play each other, and it was phenomenal. And then they'd sometimes show some under 15 schoolboy home internationals.
Yes,
they'd also show those.
Yes,
which were amazing.
But you wouldn't. Barcelona, they just weren't on your radar.
Yeah,
I mean. French football, we barely saw it. It's the World Cup, these players would come out, you'd heard kind of vague rumblings about them. Zico, they'd come, they'd be, oh my God.
I was writing this weekend
Socrates,
about...
Socrates, oh my...
I was writing this weekend about the Observer Book of Football. Remember that tiny little volume? It was published in 1972. Basically, everything I knew about football was in this book from 1972. And there was a section in it, a 10-page section called Famous International Players. And you would read this hearing
Socrates.
Of... Hearing of people. Facetti.
They were just better looking than our guys. Their shorts were tighter than our guys.
There was a team in Milan called Internazionale. These people, they could run the 100 metres in 10.5 seconds. There were defenders who not only defended, they also attacked and scored goals, Roger. It was so exotic and so different, but we never saw any of it.
They had their own teeth.
They had their own teeth. It was amazing. Yeah. They had muscles and hair.
And now, America, you get to watch these Premier Leagues in the FA Cup trot out youth teams. Rest their goalkeepers, approach the whole 90 minutes with low intensity, almost pre-season motivation against lower league grunters with their non-Premier League haircuts, which are an abomination. I mean, Bournemouth made 11 changes for their game. 11 changes.
Yeah, they're playing on also crap pitches.
Well, that's the romance of the FA Cup.
At the crappiest time of the year. So we're there at the second weekend of January. Where in England, as you know, there is absolutely no sunlight whatsoever.
Oh, it's the best time of the year if you're a druid.
It really is. And they're playing on these pitches where there's no rolling the ball around. The ball just bobbles and bounces in sort of odd directions like a rugby ball, like an American football all over the field.
And even worse, there's a massive... Well, this is better for me, but this is worse for the FA Cup. There's a massive slate of Premier League games midweek.
Yeah, two coming.
Yeah, which forces many managers...
By the way, right after a Christmas break where teams have played four.
Yeah. So the FA Cup, it couldn't look more junior right now. I mean, put it this way. Joel Campbell scored a goal. And he couldn't even be asked to pull a pacifier out of his pants. The baby was still down there with the pacifier in its mouth.
Yeah.
He just couldn't be asked to pull it out and stick it in his own gob because it was just the FA Cup. The best football I watched all weekend, David.
Yeah.
was when Kristaps Porzingis just calmly brought the basketball.
Oh, that was amazing. Did that little double kick.
He did a double keepy-uppy, and then he just palmed it in his giant digits and just blithely tossed it away.
Oh, he was good.
I just kept thinking, Jürgen Klinsmann is watching this and then counting down the days till Porzingis is eligible for US selection.
He's not nearly German enough, Rog.
And then at Ian Dark tweets, no way of sugarcoating this. Some Premier League managers are insulting FA Cup with their selections. What else are they going to win? A great question from Sir Ian.
I don't know. I mean, let's face it. I don't think there are many Premier League managers who are going to save their jobs by an FA Cup run.
Got into the quarterfinal last year, board directors.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. What's your league position?
Yeah, I mean, their jobs are measured on the money they bring into the club. Yeah. It comes from Premier League placement, Champions League placement, and most importantly of all, avoiding relegation.
Yeah.
And when this fixture list is just so thick, so fast, I mean, it feels like Liverpool are playing more nights this January than they are not playing football. Mm-hmm. Ian Dark's question is noble and beautiful.
Yeah.
But ultimately, I mean, if you think about it, football is not about glory anymore. For fans it is, but for the managers, absolutely not. And so the question is, Dave, what would the most creative American sports executive do to save the FA Cup?
Well, I'll tell you, the moment for me of the FA Cup this weekend, being a Chelsea fan, by the way, who did field a very strong team because he's still trying to find his best team. He's still trying to like get back to form. But the moment, of course, was when Ruben Loftus-Cheek got a chance to play and scored his first ever goal in a real Chelsea game. It was a big moment. So I kind of feel that the FA Cup, the only salvation is to make it count for the younger players, the fringe players who don't get a chance, who will bring everything. By the way, the fans want to see these players play. They want to see their youth players play. And I feel like that's where the FA Cup is going. By the way, whether it's by act of the Football Association or whether this is just what the Premier League teams are going to do to it.
I mean, I feel the same about the US Open Cup. It's like missed potential. It needs more sponsors. It needs more. Football revolves around money and motivation. Mm-hmm. Work out how to get sponsors involved to give it more money. I mean, they often talk in England about maybe giving a Champions League place, which will never happen for winning the FA Cup. One thing I would think about doing, and I can imagine it would be the most American thing to happen, which they'd never do, is make the tournament, instead of playing out dribbles, drabbles, next round in 2 weeks' time, and then 3 weeks later, take all those weeks that are FA Cup weeks, jam them together. Make March, like a March Madness almost. Jam all the games together. Have the whole tournament play out over the course of a month. The narrative is allowed to breathe. Make it so unbelievably
I like that idea.
Television.
It's almost, it could be.
And then Butler will end up winning it.
Yeah, it could be the winter break. And you could decide how seriously you want to go and take it. But it could essentially be the Premier League's winter break.
Or just award. Whichever lower seeded team wins a game, they get to have Marouane Fellaini play for them. That's another way you could actually make the game's fillers more at stake. Or else have Ricky Gervais host the whole thing.
I also think that something's going to happen. I was just thinking about this. They were talking during the Chelsea game about Chelsea's disastrous preseason, coming over here and losing to very young Red Bull team. You know, really just...
You killed Jose Mourinho, Red Bulls.
Arsing around in the US for far too long. Players not being in great shape. Playing very, very few, even marginally competitive games. That the preseason needs a whole readdressing if these teams are going to be ready from week one to go and play in Premier League, in Europa League, in Champions League. All these things that have to happen very early in the season. Maybe that's a place for the FA Cup to go. But there's too much inventory. You mentioned sponsors, Rog. The issue is... there's way too much soccer inventory these days. There are so many competitions, and not just in England. There's so many competitions across Europe. There are emerging leagues like MLS. There are international competitions, things like the CONCACAF Gold Cup, Copa America, which didn't even used to, or the African Cup of Nations, didn't even used to resonate when we were kids in Britain, but are now on television as well.
Now it's must watch.
I know, there's way more football.
Like the League Cup,
football.
One of the most important tournaments in world football.
Yeah.
Now that Everton are in the semi-finals.
Yeah, very true. Okay, Rog, let's get into it. Let's start at Old Trafford. Manchester United 1, Sheffield United 0. Another turgid performance from Louis van Gaal's army. United needed a last-minute Wayne Rooney penalty to prevent a replay with the League One Blades.
Oh, how low can you go, Manchester United? Their predicament summed up by Dennis Law, the United star of the 60s and 70s, who was asked this week if the team he played for in the 1960s would beat the 2015-16 edition. And he thought about it and then said, seriously, they'd win 1-0 And when asked why they'd only win by such a narrow margin, Law joked, because we're all in our 70s now.
That's very funny.
Against Sheffield United, League One, baseball AA equivalent, Dave. And not just League One, but mid-table League One.
Yeah.
I mean, all being said, a sleeping giant from England's one-time Steel City.
Are they even the best
city.
Team in Sheffield, Rog?
It's arguable, Dave. I think they're probably 11th or 12th by now. But even by Manchester United's recent brutal standards, this was negative tactics, lack of application from a fairly full-strength team. I mean, there's an image going around right now on social media of a United fan fast asleep in his seat during the game.
Once again, you had a team, Sheffield United, you've got to give some credit to. They came to play. It means a lot to them. They pressed. They harried. They prevented Man United from playing. They're dangerous from set pieces. They put pressure on them. The crowd get nervous, especially these home games for Premier League sides, where they all feel like they should be winning 6-0, 7-0. And credit the lower league sides who go to these bigger teams, are starved of possession, but still find a way to apply pressure.
This was peak Van Gaal era United, though, Davo. Possession without purpose, territorial dominance without a shot on goal until the 70th minute. I mean, the humiliation of Van Gaal just having to sit there as Memphis took a shot that went somewhere near the post, and the Old Trafford crowd just jumped up and cheered it ironically and full-throatedly.
It was a snog.
It also broke my heart watching Bastian Schweinsteiger rumble round. Bayern have dumped Bastian on United way past his sell-by date. He's become the master of the sideways pass and the bulging tummy. My five-year-old son, though, has fallen in love with him. And I'm desperately trying to buy one of those Chinese SS action figures that
you already
Schwein
had one.
As a modern. I'm desperately on eBay trying to find one of those. But I felt even more sorry for Rob Stone at halftime on Fox. This is his quote. "We tried hard to find some highlights. It was slim pickings," he said, with a smile. I mean, all that renaissance of the Swansea City triumph, the hopes it would be that United were turning a corner, hopes long dash, Wayne Rooney dropping deep to get the ball, Rooney's haircut plus the rain equals Brian Urlacher realising it's too late to get his money back. I mean, it did. It took 70 minutes for that shot to come in. It was only when Memphis came on that United started to threaten. He looked class against League One opposition, drawing the penalty heartbreakingly against a tired Sheffield defence. Rooney's celebration there when he converted it, David.
Oh, he doesn't like Sheffield, Rog.
You'd think
he had a bad night in Sheffield when he was a teenager.
Oh, that's the only kind of good night in Sheffield, David. It was pure relief. Whenever it was, he celebrated it as if he just scored a tournament winner in a crucial game. And the players were then met with the criticism of Paul Scholes, who said, "United stars, they look bored." They can it be any more damning indictment of the Manchester United talent, David?
They do look bored. But is that a little bit all of us being bored and therefore seeing it, transferring it, projecting that onto the players?
Oh, we're all just molecules.
Yeah. I mean, there's always this sense when our teams aren't playing well that some of us are more molecules than others, Rog. But there's always a sense when we're watching teams aren't playing well is we think that the players aren't inspired, or we're thinking that the players aren't working hard enough. We'll get to that later when we talk about Aston Villa. But sometimes is that not also us projecting that onto the players?
Oh, it's a deep question, David. I don't know, but I think the answer to that is something to do with, at the end of the day, the world is just balanced on the back of a turtle and then it's turtles all the way down.
I've never heard the turtle theory, but I like it.
I say, the lasting brutal image of this game for me was at the end when Louis van Gaal walked off the field, that long walk at United they have to make past the fans.
Walk.
And he just
past
tried to wave to the United faithful in victory, only to have one fan give him a huge angry double thumbs down. Painfully, excruciatingly close up. I mean, Louis van Gaal.
It's better than a double wanker sign, though.
Oh, only barely, though, David. Yeah. I mean, he is to visionary football management at this point what Sean Penn is to ethical journalism.
For more on Man United, a little less on Sean Penn, we turn now to someone who is more qualified than us to analyse the game, Rog. A gentleman who tweeted during the game at Old Trafford, "I am bored, the one and only Charlie is a red."
Hello, everybody. Happy New Year. Merry Christmas. I hope you all had a good one.
Oh,
we're better than you, Charlie, by the sound of your tweets.
Yeah.
When you're bored of United, Charlie, surely you're bored of life. So young, tell us the emotions that you experienced that led to that bomb drop of a tweet.
Well, it's very difficult being a United fan at the moment. It's definitely hard.
You try being a Chelsea fan.
Yeah, I'm glad I'm not one, if I'm personally honest at the moment. But in the last 10 home games, we've not scored in the first half. Old Trafford used to be a fortress. So for us to go from being a fortress and scoring loads of goals to now not scoring in the first half in 10 games, it's very boring.
The answer to how a fortress becomes not a fortress you can learn about by spending a huge amount of your young time playing Clash of Clans, I believe. But you've got better things to do. You said something beautiful after the game. You said, "I'm not one for negatives. I try and stay positive. But United were..."
"Positively awful." It just happened.
Did you stay to the end, Charlie?
I did, yeah.
You were one of the few. On your way home, after that win, the win of the most insipid kind, what changes went through your head that you want to see now in the next coming weeks?
Time to be awfully positive.
When I was coming home, it was sort of an odd feeling because you'd felt like you'd lost, whereas you'd actually won. Because we scored so late in the game and also we played so positively awful, it was just really weird. And, you know, I'm going to back the manager while he's here. And I'm going to back
the That's not... Backing the manager while he's here is not really a ringing endorsement. It's not really a vote of confidence, Charlie. Anyway, carry on.
Yeah, so I'm going to back the manager while he's here. And if the board feel they need to make a change, then they can make the change. I'm not someone who's going to be able to influence that change. Uh-huh. And people need to start to understand that. So instead of slating the manager, we might as well just speak about the positives. And then maybe the team might see it and actually think, yeah, we did that. Let's build on that.
But Charlie, what do you want to see the team do that they're not doing now?
I just feel like... When the team will enjoy themselves and when the team will finally realise to play for the badge on the front of the shirt, not the name on the back. When they realise that and they try and play with passion and energy and they play like Manchester United used to, well, it's basically impossible now, but if they just play with a bit of passion and a bit of motivation, I'd be so happy. It'd be such a difference.
Play for Chevrolet, lads. Come on. Play for Chevrolet. United are fifth. 3 points off fourth place, Charlie, despite all of this darkness that hangs over you at Old Trafford. Where will United be at the end of the season, if you were to predict, if you were a betting boy?
Well, I'd love to say first, but I hope we're in the top three, but I don't... I'm not too confident, but I hope it's around that radius.
Brilliant, Charlie. Well, thank you so much.
Cool.
Your pain is our gain, Charlie. It is wonderful to have you back on the show, and we look forward to having you back on before the end of the season.
Charlie.
Cool.
Study hard.
Rock on, Charlie.
Yes. Bye.
Well, that's a ringing endorsement, Rog. He's going to support the manager. While he's still there. I love it.
Oh, we had a great tweet I wish I'd asked him about. @WeemanBasher wanted to know, is it still a sad nap even if your team won the match? Hashtag MUFC.
Yeah, I know. It's odd. A post-win sad nap, Rog. Okay, Exeter 2, Liverpool 2, Rog. The League 2 Grecians, I love their nickname, earn a replay at Anfield, worth a lot of money to them, after drawing to a Liverpool side with some very NFL shirt numbers, 34, 48, 56. Jurgen Klopp's side's average age was 22. It featured only three players with more than four first-team appearances. They had to come from behind twice. The second time, a reflex finish from Brad Smith in the 73rd minute.
High-intensity football comes at a price, Davo.
Yeah.
As Liverpool are finding out after their Capital One Cup semi-final against Stoke, in which they lost Philippe Coutinho and Dejan Lovren.
Yeah.
The injury list now shows 13 first-teamers out, seven with hamstring injuries. The result, many critics almost delighting in noting, of a sudden change for their bodies to the demands of Jurgen Klopp and the relentless running his style demands. Klopp also struggled with long-term fitness towards the end at Borussia Dortmund.
Yeah.
And so, on a cold Friday night in the southwestern tip of the country, a beautiful part of the country, David.
Well, Exeter itself, not that beautiful, but it's the gateway to a beautiful part of the country, Roger.
Oh, well, that field that they played on, it looked as if a 16th century cavalry battle had recently been fought on it.
Yeah, it probably was.
And Klopp, that was the youngest starting 11 in the team's history. It was all young, raw, and blooded talent. Bizarrely enough, Liverpool's worst players were the established veterans. poor Christian Benteke.
Oh.
And, Adam Bogdan.
Tough name.
What can you say
about
Adam
Bogdan?
That's a tough
name. That name doesn't make you feel much better after a bad performance.
Oh, flapping at a corner as it whizzed straight in right by him. We're often accused of being ginger apologists on this show. I'll just say, Adam Bogdan, you make that very, very hard. For us, there were bright points for Liverpool. Teixeira, Ryan Kent and Shojo. They all look very promising. But because of the lineup, because of the injuries, because of the fixture pile-up, because of the field, many Liverpool fans are actually incredibly realistic about this result against a hard-grafting Exeter side. Did you see their manager, Paul Tisdale? The only flash thing about them.
Yeah, looks good.
Yeah, he's long lauded as the most fashion-conscious manager in the annals of English football.
Yeah.
On the sideline in his signature pork pie hat.
Love it.
I don't.
You don't like a pork pie, you love a hat.
I'd love a hat. I feel awkward about a pork pie. I like
really?
A pork pie on Justin Timberlake.
Yeah, Trilby, it's usually called.
I like a pork pie on Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
I like it on Walter White very, very much.
Uh-huh.
Less so on Paul Tisdale.
Well, interesting.
My favourite moment of the weekend, my favourite moment of the entire FA Cup.
Yeah.
Jurgen Klopp was introduced to the magic of the FA Cup. He was in front of the sponsor, Step and Repeat Wall, doing his pre-match interviews. Everything looked normal. And then the camera just shifted a little to his right and showed he was pressed up against a kitchen sink full of dirty teacups. And then the camera just awkwardly moved even further right and showed there were two Exeter tea ladies squeezing together a foot out of camera shot. Two English beauties who both looked like they were last seen on television screens in Children of the Corn 2.
Wow.
And he just dealt with it with incredible style. And
he's been in England a couple of months. This is what England is like all the time.
He deals with everything.
Sinks full of dirty teacups and two tea ladies. Now, that is basically everywhere you go in England. I'm going to England tomorrow night. You know what I'm going to see almost within an hour of arrival? A sink full of dirty teacups and two tea ladies.
Yeah, not one tea lady.
No, two. They travel in pairs.
They travel in packs.
Yeah.
He deals with everything the same way, though, David. With his just pack-a-day smoker's cough that he uses to calm down even the most surreal of moments.
Yeah.
I realise it's his social pitching wedge. When he's in a difficult social situation, he just has to throw his big German head back and let out that Klopp cackle.
Yeah, let out those gnashers.
Just give it bifters.
Yeah, giving it bifters, Rog.
By the way, Exeter, their profit from the draw plus the replay will be over $1 million. That is the magic of the FA Cup.
Yeah.
And Kevin Doyle, Mr. Moseley of Downton Abbey fame.
He got it right, didn't he, Rog? He predicted, after having a taste of his pie, he predicted a draw. He saw it. He foresaw it.
And then a 5-0 bottom spanking back at Anfield for Liverpool. Hashtag pie don't lie.
We will see, Rog. Okay, Chelsea 2, Scunthorpe 0. A professional performance from a Chelsea side that included a full complement of first-teamers against League One Scunthorpe. Goals from Diego Costa and second-half substitute Ruben Loftus-Cheek. His first for Chelsea. Repel a well-organised iron side and move Chelsea into the fourth round.
Diego Costa scores again.
Yeah.
In the week,
good goal, actually.
In the week that he's shown he's bored now of fighting opposition players.
He's going to fight his own.
He's going to move on to fighting his own. The notion of Costa and Oscar.
I know, it's not a fair fight.
It sounds
you can't have players from different weight divisions go against each other in UFC, Roger, in boxing.
I just imagine it's as close as we'll get to watching a viper and a mongoose as two humans can ever come.
The most amazing thing about that story is it was Oscar who apologised afterwards. That was that is the level of pressure that he's applying on people, that his own teammates apologise afterwards.
They need him.
Yeah, well, they do need him. He was good. He had a very, very good game, looks very, very active. He ran his little legs off. He does have legs a bit like Thomas Muller's. I noticed this. He's just got something. He's lost a lot of weight, and he's looking a bit Thomas Muller leg.
He loses
now,
it in the shins.
Good. No, he is.
He loses it.
He's
all
got
in
those
the shins.
Bandy Thomas Muller legs right now. He had a good game. He was aggressive. He was obnoxious. He did all the things you're used to. He put an arm and a hand in an opponent's face. Did all the things you're used to. But he ran a lot and performed very well. I mean, look, still a lot of the same problems for Chelsea. Ramirez, I mean, cannot put a pass to one of his own players.
And he brought down Kevin Van Veen.
Oh, yeah.
The Iron, that's who they are. Scunthorpe, the United Kingdom's largest steel processing centre, which means it's not that big.
Yeah.
Also known as the industrial garden town, which is very romantic.
Yeah, he looked good, Van Veen.
Yeah, he buzzed the post with a free kick. But scummers, they won't get no penalty love at Stamford Bridge. It was what they call in football a nailed-on penalty. Mm-hmm. Nailed on, one of the few football phrases I hate more than fizzing the ball into a dangerous area.
Yeah.
But Fabregas had a good game. At P. Mullis tweeted, there's clearly an inverse relationship between Cesc's level of play and the amount of spray tan he's using.
Yeah, very true. There's only one significant thing that really happened for Chelsea, though. It's the goal for Ruben Loftus-Cheek. A very, very well-taken goal. He played in the number 10 role, not where Mourinho had him playing, which was sort of in a Matic role, sort of a big guy in defensive midfield. He played in the number 10 role. He replaced Oscar. And it was that late break into the penalty area. Great finish with his left foot. He's a big boy. He's a large, large athlete, Rog.
Ruben Loftus-Cheek here has begun. His first shot on goal for the senior team.
Yeah.
It's his first goal for the senior team. And his freedom that he played with.
Yeah.
I'd say symbolic of the relaxed new vibe.
Yeah, it is. It's a vibe. It is a vibe, Rog.
It is. San Jose Mourinho, the place is eerily akin to an angry septic boil that's been expertly lanced, David. That's how I like to think about it.
Two important games for Chelsea this week. West Bromwich Albion. At home on Wednesday. And then, Rog, the Men in Blazers derby, the Blazerico, coming up next Saturday. I'll be there at Stamford Bridge, Chelsea against Everton.
I'll be there behind my couch, hating every one of the 90 minutes.
I enjoyed this game. It's one of the highlights of the weekend, Rog. Tottenham 2, Leicester 2. The marquee third-round fixture. It's going to need a replay, Rog, at the King Power Stadium to decide a winner. Harry Kane came off the bench and converted an 89th-minute penalty. Was never going to miss that. His 50th career goal for Spurs, amazing.
Yeah, they're going to play each other three times.
It's amazing.
Within 10 days. And what do we learn then from round one? Mm-hmm. Not a huge amount, because Leicester's starting 11 was really a reserve string. Ben Chilwell, Marcin Wasilewski, and Johan Benaluan.
Yeah.
The core of their back line, one league start between the three of them.
Uh-huh.
Spurs won, kind of fresh face, Josh Onoma. The 18-year-old midfield prospect who'd only had 9 minutes of league action before. And Kevin Wimmer, nice to see him, the Austrian defender who played before at Cologne. And the game began with Tottenham dominating in their 2015-16 style, their signature interchangeable attacking style.
Yeah.
Chadley flying down the flank, blasting the ball at a good height, you could say, for Schmeichel.
Yeah.
But he just punched it back down the gut of the box.
Yeah, I know. An odd decision to punch it. And in swoops, Eriksen. Rog, pretty simple finish.
Oh, I thought it was fantastic, though. He finished it with the accuracy as if the post was a magnet and the ball was made out of nickel.
Yeah.
But Leicester's equaliser, total shock.
Yeah, from a set piece, Rog. Wasilewski. He gets free. I love the look of this man. He looks like a rugby player, Rog. Yeah. He looks like something out of Black Ops. He doesn't really look like a professional footballer.
Yeah, if you've not seen him, he's a swarthy, bearded man. He looks very House Greyjoy. He's a bloke who delights in paying the iron price. He'd already been nutmegged once, humiliated. I think he'd been yellow carded.
Yeah.
And he just simply...
Maybe red carded, but just refused to leave the field, Rog.
I wouldn't argue with him, as a referee. And he just gutted his way through the traffic of the set piece to storm home and get his head to the corner. When I see this guy, Davo, I think about a story I read in a Lemmy obit, the Motorhead great. A doctor once told Lemmy that a transfusion would kill him because his body no longer contained any human blood.
What was it? Bat blood.
I didn't think about that.
I know, probably something else. Just synthetic blood.
I just imagine it was all beer, heroin and used condoms.
Pretty much. But then Leicester took the lead, Rog. Fills my heart with joy. Okazaki.
Oh, he fills everyone's heart with joy. Super sub.
Yeah.
Came on for Kante, and then he had a jinking run, a bit of luck, and a goal within 2 minutes of coming on.
But then the penalty, Rog.
Kane trotted on. He'd actually barely got a touch of the ball. But then he thrashed home a very, very dodgy, very late penalty, which he celebrated. Yeah, I've got to say, Davo, if you were a Spurs fan with a top four place up for grabs, some saying that a title case can be made for this Spurs team.
Without a doubt.
Europa League participation still going on. Uh-huh. And a manager whose teams are known to tire in the final third of a season.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you want to avoid a replay and actually prefer to be out the effort? The draw is the worst kind of result for this Spurs team. My mind says yes, my heart says no. I know a lot of Spurs fans are like, we've not won a trophy in a long time. The FA Cup's... I'd say a draw feels worse than a loss to some degree. These guys are going to have to go again and again.
Yeah, but when your fans, they've paid good money to come and see you play, they're packed there, you don't want to lose at home. You don't want to lose at home. Don't want to lose momentum, Rog. Okay, Wickham 1, Aston Villa 1. Villa give up a 1-0 lead to League 2 Wickham at Adams Park, keeping Remy Gard winless in 10 games since taking over for Tim Sherwood. Tensions boiled over post-game with angry Villa fans, so don't blame them, confronting captain Michael Richards.
I think the word angry is just redundant. They're just Villa fans at this point. But the magic of
Villa, travelling Villa away fans at Wickham.
Oh, the magic of the FA Cup is that little teams have a chance, like Aston Villa. And they didn't take it against Wickham with their beautiful two-tone blue quartered jersey. Yeah. Wickham, of course, the town hitherto best known as the hometown of 80s pop star Howard Jones. Things will only get better. And they did for Wickham after conceding early to a morose Micah Richards.
Yeah, it was a pretty good finish for a centre-back, Rog. But back to his old right-backing days.
Talking about fantastic finishes, Wickham won a slightly dodgy penalty given away by Westwood in the corner of the box. And the penalty was thumped home by Joe Jacobson.
Yeah.
The first British Jew to play professional football for 25 years, Dave.
Exciting, Rog.
Mind-blowing, honestly,
Dave. You're a Wickham fan. Are we buying Wickham?
No.
Are we buying Wickham now? Well, or just Joe Jacobson?
They are heavily in debt, Dave.
Yeah.
So they are available. Sponsored by Beechdean Farmhouse Ice Cream.
Yeah, I like that.
And for whom the stadium parking lot was in shop for the entire game. And it was barely full.
Yeah.
I mean, they are beset
How much Beechdean Farmhouse Ice Cream do you think they're selling in January in England, in Wickham?
I think
the world.
I've got to say, whatever they're paying, their brand exposure in the United States, Dave. Yeah. Over the weekend is worth every penny.
Very true.
But this club is beset by debt. Their manager, Gareth Ainsworth, at the final whistle, punched the air in celebration. More cash coming in from a replay. As a player, he was known as Wild Thing. And he looks now like someone who would hunt you down in a Guy Ritchie movie. He's got the look of a young Bill Nighy about him, actually.
Yeah, he does, very much so.
But the scenes shown over and over at the end were Micah Richards.
Yeah, getting into it with the fans. How did this all start, though, Rog?
Well, according to the English players, David, this is a sad and brutal story. It's not one I take any delight in.
Yeah.
The cause of the fracas, Brad Guzan. Yes, our own beloved. Yeah. We've been praying for him all this time. And he and Julian Lescott, they spent the second half on the bench playing a game which involved who could spit the ball of chewing gum furthest from the bench over the pitch line. And the fans then decided to tell them they weren't, quote, proper Villa, to which Brad Guzan and Julian Lescott took turns in telling them to...
Wow.
It's one of the greatest sins that a player in the relegation zone, any kind of player, can do. Number one, engage fan.
Yeah.
Number two...
Abuse fan.
Number two, tell fan to...
Yeah.
I mean, it's just fans like to believe that you are as passionate about the team as they are.
Yeah. But
fans are rarely interested in chewing gum, spitting distance records.
Yeah.
Hashtag pray for Guzan, Davey.
Well, pray for Guzan. We're going to have to say slightly different prayers, Rob, I think, from now on.
At Ashtonist tweeted us to say, Villa is the playboy mansion of football clubs. They once attracted top celebs. Now only Carrot Top and Paulie Shaw frequent the place. But don't worry, the cavalry is coming, Villa. American sports executive Tom Fox, ex-NBA Asia, now Aston Villa's CEO, is headed to our city, New York, for crisis meetings with Randy Lerner to try and right the sinking ship. Manager Remy Gard has begged Lerner to speak up, Dave, and talk about his plans for the club.
Yeah.
And General Charles Krulak, the Aston Villa board member who served both in Vietnam and the First Gulf War, has said he, quote, faced way bigger losing battles and won them in his military career than the predicament currently facing the Premier League's bottom club. That doesn't exactly inspire you with confidence.
And also, he did have helicopter gunships and napalm, one assumes.
Love to
see. And the US Navy. Okay, and the Air Force, by the way. He had quite a lot of ammunition that Aston Villa, one thinks, probably won't employ or deploy at some point in the Premier League campaign.
You're clearly underestimating Rudy Gestede at your peril.
Yeah, very true. Okay, other scores of note, Rog. Oxford United, 3. Swansea, 2.
In the week, Swansea appoint Alan Curtis as manager until the end of the season. And Curtis says, I've never really seen myself as a manager before.
Yeah, you won't be doing it for long either.
Reassuring words, I'm sure, for the Swansea hardcore.
Yeah.
He celebrated by watching his beleaguered team outworked and outthought by League Two contenders, fourth tier Oxford. And he later told the media, our players couldn't cope.
Norwich, 0. Manchester City, 3.
Oh, a solo piece of poetry for Kun Aguero.
Doncaster, 1. Stoke, 2.
Oh, Doncaster Rovers, League One side. Their midfield, this story gives me no pleasure, Davo. Their midfielder, Richard Chaplow, made the mistake of getting the same train home as a posse of Stoke fans. Chaplow is a bald young man. He has been since a bout of glandular fever made his hair fall out as a youth.
Hmm.
And the Stoke fans did what football fans do. They surrounded him and chanted, "He looks like my thumb. He looks like my thumb. Richard Chaplow, he looks like my thumb."
Oh.
Which Richard Chaplow videoed and put on Twitter. The video's actually up on Deadspin. And the amazing thing about the video, Dave, this huge Stoke posse screaming at a bald man. At least three, I counted, are the Stoke aggressors. They're bald themselves, Dave.
They're deniers. They look like they're deniers.
They are deniers, Dave, and they look like their thumbs too. And I just say, bald nation.
Yeah.
If we don't love ourselves, who will love us for us? It's Hashtag bald self-love.
Very true, Rog. Okay, and finally, the big one. Everton 2, Dagenham and Redbridge 0.
Oh, a game broadcast radio only. It's like a return to my youth. FA Cup, severely diminished entity, Dave. As I said earlier, it's no League Cup or the Capital One Cupboardy Cup as it's now and now.
Yeah, Roger, 2-1 up in that one at the end of the first leg against Manchester City.
Oh, Dave, a fearless, a resilient performance that last Wednesday. Yes, City collectively sleepwalked around the field. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Touré was so disinterested. His performance, it was actually borderline avant-garde at this point. Everton grabbed the winner seconds after conceding to the beautiful yet incompetent Jesus Navas.
Mm-hmm.
Mo Besic and Gareth Barry were imperious. Yeah. God, I love Mohamed Besic.
Yeah.
Martinez has called him a contagious footballer.
Mm-hmm.
He's a player who seems to be energised by the Goodison faithful. Mm-hmm. And then he energises the rest of his team as a result. His knockout tackle.
I think Martinez might have meant it literally.
He did this tackle on Yaya Touré.
Yeah.
I mean, it just shattered the Ivorian. It made it a magic night that I shall long remember. I'll just say, rarely is a game that is irrelevant, like the semi-final of the League Cup, mattered so much to me. And the bad news about the victory is that the pain of the 4-0 beatdown we'll get in the next leg at Manchester City is really going to haunt
me. What is the tiebreaker? Do away goals count double in the Capital One?
They do, but only after extra time, oddly
Interesting.
Enough.
So it's designed to go to penalties, basically.
Yeah, pretty much. We are doomed, Dave. Producer JW sent me an article this week about Minnesota Vikings coach Mike Zimmer. That it was a Times article that said, "Trouble with winning, enjoying it." And Zimmer admitted, "I've got a hard time enjoying wins. You like to win, you're excited about it, but the next week's another challenge. I immediately start to think about how I get my team ready. I wish I could enjoy things more, but there's always another thing I need to get done." And I realised, me and Mike Zimmer, Dave.
JW was really preaching to the choir, sending you that article.
I realised, me and Mike Zimmer,
I
believe we're both suffering from a case of cherophobia.
Uh-huh.
The fear of doom being always just around the corner
against
Chelsea. Next weekend.
Already preparing yourself. You're preparing yourself for victory by preparing yourself for loss, Rog. Convincing yourself that there's no way possible that you can get a result out of the game so that when it happens, it can feel even better. I love it.
Managing expectations.
Transparent,
we had a great try. I've got to read this one. At Ryan J. Paradis, being an Everton fan is tough. It leaves you devoid of emotion, but try being both an Everton and a Bengals fan.
Yeah.
God bless.
Hard. Other Premier League team's results, Rog. Southampton 1, Palace 2, West Brom 2, Bristol City 2, Watford 1, Newcastle 0, West Ham 1, Wolves 0, and finally Birmingham 1, Bournemouth 2.
Oh,
up the cherries, Rog.
James Alexander Gordon.
Yeah.
Was looking down at you with pride as you read those out, David.
Yeah, the defending FA Cup champions, Rog, Arsenal, advanced against Big Sam's Sunderland 3-1, courtesy of goals from Joel Campbell, Olivier Giroud and Aaron Ramsey.
I mean, this was the game in which Hector Bellerin showed DeAndre Yedlin how an elite right-back with pace can destroy an opponent.
Mm-hmm.
Such a good play. It's not just about pace. It's about decision-making and intelligence. And this pass for the third goal, Giroud's obligatory notch, took out five defenders. Deliriously, Arsenal blooded a 17-year-old French midfielder, Jeff Ran Adelaide, who I think they only signed because he has three names, like all of their young players.
Uh-huh.
He's 17. They signed him this year. I'll say this for him. He's got the name of an elite footballer.
Yeah.
Jeff.
I thought you meant Adelaide.
Like Jeff Cameron.
Certainly, Fox's pre-game show was all about Yedlin. It was all Yedlin all of the time. Rog. It was though no one else was playing in the FA Cup other than the American, DeAndre Yedlin. Rog, okay, with a two-point lead at the top of the table, there's a sense that Arsene Wenger's men could shirk their recent reputation as second half of the season chokers.
We will see, Dave.
For more on what's at stake in North London and the direction Arsenal's season is headed, we turn to The Guardian writer and author of Invincible, Inside Arsenal's Unbeaten 2003-2004 Season, a byline we always look forward to reading, the one and only Amy Lawrence. Welcome to Men in Blazers.
Hello, what a pleasure to virtually meet you.
We couldn't be more delighted to have you on, because we've got a conundrum that you're going to help us through, Amy. Two seasons ago, Arsenal, your beautiful Arsenal, were top of the table at New Year. But by March, they were flat out of the Premier League title race. What, if anything, feels different this time around for you?
That's a good question. Some things feel different and some things feel probably quite worryingly familiar. I think what feels different is that there is a winning spirit in the team and a bit more authority, I think, in the squad than they had perhaps a couple of years ago. Obvious additions like Petr Cech and Alexis Sanchez and the evolution, if you like, of Mesut Ozil. And I think when he first arrived from Real Madrid, perhaps understandably when you were playing with Ronaldo and you were at, you know, what, arguably the biggest team in the world, it might have seemed like a small step down to him. And I think he probably thought, oh, this is OK. I've come to London. It's not bad. The team's quite nice. I quite like Arsene Wenger. And it took him a little while to, I think, really comprehend what was required to get fully integrated as a player, as a person, and also realise, you know what, I'm really into this, which he now is. So right there, you've got three very, very high-class performers who are, as well as being great players, people who know what it takes to win big prizes in football. And mentality-wise, having won the two successive FA Cups,
yeah,
I think is something that's made them feel a lot better about themselves. The whole Arsenal didn't win anything for 5 years, 6 years, 7 years, 8 years, 9 years thing was a bit of an issue. And the fact that's no longer an issue, I think, is helpful.
You know, the mentality thing, I'm glad you brought that up. Because if I remember rightly, 2 years ago when they were leading, they had a terrible record against the top six. And I think they ended the season with a terrible record against the top six as well. And it was all part of the whole thing. They can't beat the big teams. This season already, I think their record against the top six is almost unmatched. And for the rest of the season, I think they've got to go away to a bunch of those teams in the top half of the table. But you just feel differently about this team. I certainly do watching them.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think, never mind kind of looking at the fact they've got to go to lots of these teams between now and May, they've actually got to go to a couple of quite difficult places in the next week. And I think having this conversation today and having this conversation in a week's time might even be quite different, because although Liverpool have got their issues at the moment, Anfield's not usually a pushover, and Stoke City away is an absolute nightmare ground for Arsenal. And I think Stoke will be kind of licking their lips already, really, at the prospect of that game, because they love nothing better than getting one over Arsenal and Arsene Wenger's team. So, you know, I'm intrigued in a way, sitting here now, imagining how the conversation might go in a few days' time.
Amy, for those of our listeners who haven't followed your byline as closely as we have, you were a fan of Arsenal from the age of six. You became a deliriously well-respected professional following the North London tour. I mean, few journalists know Arsene Wenger as well as you do through your professional work. What do you think is going on in his head right now? Jose Mourinho's gone. He's leading the pack at the halfway point. Title very much up for grabs in his 19th season. With all the Piers Morganish detractors saying he'll never win the title again, the transfer window is yawning open. The second half of the season is there for the taking. Talk us through how you understand he'll understand what's going on.
Well, I think one of the things about Arsene that people don't realise is that he doesn't like to look at what other teams are doing. He is a very singular man who is quite obsessed by what's going on in his domain, which is Arsenal Football Club. Getting up in the morning and going to the training ground, getting out there on the training ground, which is where he feels free, and where he feels his work really belongs, that's what dominates his thoughts. He'll just be thinking about his team. You know, he's famous for, compared to some other managers, shall we say, who are obsessed about the, you know, analysing the opponent to see which tiny fractions they can get a little detail of an advantage from over a game. That's not really Arsene Wenger. He's not interested in the data that will help him to deal with a particular opponent. But what he is really fixated with is, how can I get my team and my players to play the best that they can play?
The paucity of challenges in this Premier League race is actually the thing that gives me the most confidence about Arsenal's ability to land it. But after so long without a title, do you expect Arsene's approach to the transfer window, which is now yawning open, to change? He's this close to the promised land, Amy. Do you expect an unexpected big money splurge? And what would it be?
No, I don't. And I think that's a bit of a pity, because I think that that could give them an edge. But the obvious other side to that coin is a very simple question. Who is he supposed to buy?
Yeah, I think Sunderland would accept $25 million for Lee Catamol.
Yeah, I'm sure Catamol's someone who's quite high on Arsene's radar, but maybe not quite.
I don't think the fans would see the sense of humour in that.
I'm not his agent, but I think I can get you Stevie Naismith for about 40 mil. Listen, your book, Invincible, Inside Arsenal's Unbeaten 2003-2004 season. Oh, it's the Arsenal fans' apex, the first undefeated season in over 100 years. Many newer American Arsenal fans will hear the title of this book and just assume that it's a work of science fiction. It's not. It's a beautiful project, an exploration of chemistry and team spirit, as well as a tale of your own fandom. But Patrick Vieira is the star of the book in many regards, and the star, the heartbeat of that invincible midfield. He's recently signed on to coach NYCFC in MLS. From what you know of him, what do you expect of Patrick Vieira, the coach? And what does it do to your Arsenal insides to see him align with the Manchester City organisation?
I'll deal with the second part of that question first. That is a tough one for a lot of Arsenal supporters to stomach, because they feel that he should be in North London. The part of your question about how he's going to fare coaching-wise is fascinating, because he has had an extraordinary education as a football man. First of all, as a player, under some very, very talented managers. Secondly, as a player playing with some humongously talented players, both for France and for his various clubs that he played in, to be winning World Cups and European Championships, he's experienced a huge amount of excellence in football that he's seen. Patrick is a smart man. He's an incredibly determined man. He's quite a quiet man, which is where I'm most interested to see how he gets along. Because I think in modern management, one thing that you really need in spades is a huge sort of personality, a charisma and an aura, where you can hold the attention of people that you're talking to and effectively you're educating. When he walks into the dressing room or he's on the training ground with those players have to absolutely believe him and listen to everything that he says. He's got huge strength of personality and he's got great charisma. But getting that across verbally, that's the key. He knows that this is where he's going to be judged. And if he wants to be a manager of a major club, probably back in Europe, which I think he does, then this has got to go quite well. So it's a very interesting challenge, because he's dealing with a newly put together team. Of course, he's got all the backup from the Manchester City situation, and I think that will help him. But it's still, he's stepping into the unknown and he knows that. So I'm watching this space like the rest of you with a really interested view.
Well, last question. You've got kids, right, Amy?
I have.
Have any of them witnessed the world in which Arsenal have won the Premier League?
Oh, no. Not yet. So they've seen some FA Cup wins and that's gone down very well. So people who say the FA Cup's nothing these days and it's all about winning the league or Champions League, I'm not sure I'd agree with that.
What would it mean for you to have them experience a Premier League title win for Arsenal alongside you?
I remember when I first watched Arsenal win the league in 1989 and I was 17. And they won it the time before when I was born. And there was a guy next to me, a big old skinhead, rough-looking fella. And when the final whistle went, he just burst into tears. And he was just going like, I've waited 17 years for this, like, for it to happen again. And obviously the first few years of that 17 years, I was quite a small child or a baby, so I had no knowledge of it whatsoever. But I'd still waited quite a long time. I'd had the stories passed down from my family of how they'd watched Arsenal win the league in 1971. And suddenly there I was, and I bumped off school in 1989 to go up to Liverpool to watch Arsenal win the league. And I actually remember going out and buying the newspapers the next day and thinking, that's it now. I can die a happy person. I've watched my team win the league. But, I mean, there was a tremendous feeling of a sort of wow factor that this thing that felt so amazing and unachievable for all of my childhood was actually real. So it's a special moment for any youngster lucky enough to experience seeing their team do that, definitely.
We wish you well, Amy.
Pleasure to speak to you.
Yeah, good luck, Amy. Thank you.
Fantastic writer, fantastic book.
You can't really not be a fan of that team. They were incredible, Rog. Even Jermaine Pennant was good that season. Okay, the Ballon d'Or, Rog. Just minutes before taping this pod, the Ballon d'Or gala wrapped up at a FIFA labyrinth in Switzerland. A massive day for US soccer. Carly Lloyd was named Women's Player of the Year, and Jill Ellis received Women's Coach of the Year honours. Some guy named Lionel Messi, Rog, won the Ballon d'Or, and Barcelona's Luis Enrique took home Men's Coach of the Year honours.
Oh, I only watched this event for the red carpet. Yeah. It was a bit anticlimactic.
There was Seacrest there.
No, it wasn't, Dave.
Yeah.
Which made it even better.
Uh-huh.
But Messi, after his polka dot tuxes and the purple one he wore that made him look like a ventriloquist dummy last year,
mm-hmm.
he looked like he just popped into Men's Warehouse and mm-hmm. with a modicum of dress sense.
Yeah.
So it was left to Carly Lloyd, who looked so elegant, to steal a design plaudits. And a momentary dropping of the guard for her, a rare revelation of emotion at the recognition when she was awarded her trophy for how hard she's worked to grind away to the top over the past 13 years. Jill Ellis, also incredibly articulate and graceful. I did like Sunil Gulati tweeted how elated he is for Jill Ellis. It's worth looking at his tweet just for the comments underneath, such as, by the 100, are you going to allow Jill Ellis' team to actually play on grass and get the same respect as the men's team? It's a tough life running US soccer. BBC calculated 57.6% of winners of this trophy, Davo, have had brown hair. Only 3.4% have been ginger.
Wow. But the Charlton, would Charlton have been counted as ginger?
I think he would have gone for a win in the bull column, Davo.
Yeah.
Fifth win for Messi. How long do we have to wait till someone not named Lionel or Cristiano wins it?
On the Monday after Jordan Spieth won the first PGA tournament of the year, finishing 30 under, just destroying the field, Rog. Remember, we always ask the question, could anybody come after Tiger Woods? And then suddenly Jordan Spieth has become incredibly dominant.
It's
you never know where it's going to come from.
You mentioned Jordan Spieth, because I think it's going to be this year, 2016. And it's going to be when Jordan Morris lacerates the field in the
good
Copa.
Good year for Jordans.
For the USA. Great tweet from @DavidAlessandro. Wants to know how you feel about the coaching award, Davo.
Yeah.
How could Jose Mourinho not win Manager of the Year?
Yeah.
He took a relegation-level team mm-hmm. and won the Premier League with them.
I know. Certainly that's Jose's point of view, Rog. Okay, in MLS, in what's becoming a uniquely American soccer tradition, LAFC unveiled its crest and colours in front of their official supporters club last week before they've ever played a game. They've got an official supporters club. They also announced Will Ferrell is joining a list of owners already teeming with celebrities.
There's something very funny but very moving about it at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
The passion for soccer in the US overflows to such an extent that they have a group of people who will cheer, literally chant, Davo, which they did for the whole thing, for a team that have no players.
Yeah.
And they're just a crest. Yeah. They've only just become a crest.
They like the brand. It's a franchise, Rog.
It's both surreal and fantastic in equal measure.
Mm-hmm.
At Dave Barnes Music.
Yeah.
And that's killer diggings to most of you.
Exactly.
He says it harkens back to the Betsy Ross 1777 American flag reveal. Huge hype.
Yeah.
I mean, nowadays Betsy Ross would hire a social team to leak incorrect flag designs onto Twitter to stoke up interest before the official release in a little house in Philadelphia. By the way, LA now have, with Will Ferrell, 26 co-owners, David.
Yeah.
Including Magic Johnson, Mia Hamm, the author Tony Robbins.
Yeah, makes sense.
Bunch of baseball players.
Uh-huh.
Vincent Bloody Tan. Just like we're the only podcast President Obama has not been on.
Yeah.
Are we also the only people in America who are not part owners of LAFC?
Yeah, I've spent more time in LA than you have. I'm a little more offended than you that I haven't been contacted by the LAFC people.
There's Bruegger's.
Very, very true, Rog. OK, we hope to have an interview with LAFC president Tom Penn, no relation, in our newsletter, which we produce with our partner Guinness this Friday. You can subscribe on meninblazers.com.
Maybe okay. He wasn't one of the ones chanting. In fact, it's probably the solution. The people who were chanting were the 26 owners.
Yeah, very, very true.
They're hardcore massive.
Yeah, very true. Zinedine Zidane, Rog, delivers a 5-0 win over Deportivo La Coruña in his home debut as Real Madrid manager, thanks to a Gareth Bale hat-trick and Karim Benzema brace.
Oh, 5-0 win.
Yeah.
In a game. 3 goals for Manchester United's Gareth Bale.
Yeah.
2 for amateur pornography's Karim Benzema.
Is any pornography ever amateur, Rog?
I don't know. Stuff I'm going to leak off your phone. You're not going to get paid for, David. One of my favourite guilty pleasures in football.
Yeah.
Watching Ronaldo's body language when Real Madrid score, but he wasn't the scorer.
Yeah.
Every time Gareth Bale scores, he looks like he's a little bit sick in his own mouth. I mean, for the 5th goal, the Portuguese held up the ball in the box, was dispossessed. The ball then fell to Benzema, who thrashed it home. Ronaldo dropped to his knees in frustration. He stayed there for a second as the Madrid players celebrated. If you looked on, he looked more like a defender who'd conceded than an attacking legend whose team had just defenestrated their opponents. Zidane was a legend. Very few legends are able to become great managers.
I was thinking this when Amy Lawrence was talking about Patrick Vieira, that there aren't many great players, of the great players who've come through any of those teams, who've ended up being successful coaches. Klinsmann is a rare exception, Rog. Don't make that face.
And Beckenbauer, not a good manager.
Yeah. Well, and most good managers.
Platini.
A lot of very, very good managers were average players or below average players.
I mean, Glenn Hoddle, who is a former English genius midfielder.
Yeah.
He just alienated the players he coached. Because he couldn't communicate to normal mere mortals who were excellent.
He would make them run drills that they couldn't complete that he could do.
He'd be like, just in that situation, just hit a 50-yard no-look pass. It's easy.
Yeah.
And whether the same will be true for Zidane, only time will tell. I mean, his track record is scant as a manager. I will say, he looks magnificent on the manager's bench. Mm-hmm. His angular, bony features, they just catch the light and cast shadows of mysterious darkness in exquisite fashion. He's a great-looking bald.
He is, and he's not a bald denier. He's got Devo baldness. He's got that quite a lot of hair on the front. Way less bald in person, people. But he's got a big spammer right in the middle at the back. I like that. Proper Devo bald.
It's his cheekbones, though.
Okay, Rog, on to the Ravens. I need to work on those. Our first Raven is from Mark Bujarski in Missouri. Very American name. I remembered the pod in which you spoke about a GFOP dating service. I want to be your first customer.
God forbid.
We got to do this. Once I get the pub up and running, GFOP dating service. I'm a Spurs fan, and it has been a dream of mine to find a girl who loves Spurs as much as I do. My question is, I love men. My question is, am I setting myself up for automatic failure? Is there any chance for a successful relationship with a partner who also supports a team that has given me so many sad naps? Is there any chance that I can find a normal girl who is a Spurs fan? Or are we all destined to be emotional wrecks? Or is it perhaps better for Spurs fans to partner up so there is someone to ease the pain? I leave my future in your hands. Hashtag that's so Spursy. Hashtag sleepless in Joplin. I'm trying to think if I know any single female Spurs fans.
God, your approach and my approach are so different.
Yeah.
I'd just say, I think your future's extremely positive. Your team's not yours. Mm-hmm. I don't know you, Mark.
Yeah.
But I think it helps to have a partner who shares your passion.
Yeah.
I mean, my wife loves football.
Uh-huh.
And it really helps, seeing as I spend so much of my life watching and even more thinking.
Yeah, agreed.
But my only warning would be, and this would be the question you should be asking, who should we name our children after?
Yeah.
And whatever you do, don't name them Harry Kane.
Yeah.
Unless you also really love Real Madrid. Call them Direwolf instead. It's a beautiful name for a child.
Okay, Rog, the winner of the coveted Guinness Men in Blazers Poet, Philosopher, Soccer Scribe, Raven of the Week is Renato Lema in Tampa, Florida, via Peru. A Liverpool fan, thanks to Michael Owen. Rog, he writes, my beloved Reds have had many up and down seasons since I started following them, and this year has been no exception. Like you both, this season I've taken a liking to the smaller teams like Bournemouth and Leicester. especially the Foxes, with their meteoric rise to the top of the league. The upcoming fixture between Leicester and Liverpool brings a serious existential conflict, as I would like to see my dear Liverpool get the 3 points, but I also kind of, sort of, want to secretly wish for a Leicester win so they can keep rising. My question is, obviously this Raven is a couple of weeks old, if your team is currently not in serious title contention, is it okay to wish that a team not named Man United, Man City, Arsenal, Chelsea or, God forbid, Everton, fighting for the top spot, beats your own team just so that they can continue their quest for glory? Is this considered betrayal? Should I just not watch the game? I think Leicester have a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity and would love to see them winning the league. If they lose the title by 2 or 3 points, I would probably blame it on this game versus Liverpool that they didn't win. I would appreciate your advice, gents.
What a question, David. Yeah. Have you ever rooted against your own team?
Never. Never. And look, and I've had flirtations. I've had other teams that I'm fond of. You know, San Etienne, Inter, Bristol City, Fulham even. But I've never cheered for any of them against my beloved Chelsea.
There was once when Everton were playing Arsenal and Arsenal were competing with Liverpool for the last top four spot.
Oh, interesting.
And I didn't cheer for Arsenal, but the fact they actually won the game lessened my pain. But yeah, it didn't erase it. The question actually reminds me of another one that we've been asked a lot recently.
Yeah.
Which is, if your team is mid-table, is it okay to not watch them? Because NBC have every game available. I mean, it's a question really is born of NBC's coverage, as opposed to the traditional English way of watching, which is where you go to watch your local team live. So why would you stop watching your local team live? A lot of Americans have asked, the American way, mid-season, if your team is mid-table, has nothing to play for, and there's a massive game at the same time, with social media, second screen, focused on that massive game, which you'd rather watch live. Is it okay not to watch your...
Wow. This is the first year in years I'm actually going to have to deal with this, Rog.
It's a question I can understand that. Yeah. That I can understand, but to root for your own team to lose, to be honest, it's to desecrate yourself, to erase a piece of your own identity, which you can never get back. Don't do it.
Yeah. Okay, Roger, your weekend looks like this, courtesy of Mini USA. Chelsea versus Everton, El Blazerico, 10 a.m. Saturday on USA Network. Look for me, Roger, I'll be waving at you.
God have mercy upon our souls.
Manchester City versus Palace at the same time on NBCSN. And Liverpool versus United, 9:05 a.m. Sunday on NBCSN.
And a whole slate of games Tuesday, Wednesday, which is why this pod's
week,
squeezing
yeah,
out with just absolute magic on the agenda.
Yeah, I'll be at the West Bromwich Albion game too for Chelsea. There are many ways to connect to us. One is through our Amazon Emporium, which helps keep the show going. Anytime you go on Amazon, for items big or small, just click off the Emporium page. Men in Blazers gets a tiny percentage that allows us to cover the cost of creating the show. What are you going to put in the Emporium this week, Rog?
A book!
Oh!
Zinky Boys. Soviet Voices from the Afghanistan War.
Wow.
Amazingly Human Oral History by the Nobel Prize winner Svetlana Aleksevich.
Wow, light reading.
Recently reissued. Oh, it's dark. I mean, it was the book's name for the sealed zinc coffin that thousands of dead Russian soldiers returned to the homeland in from a war many had signed up for based on idealistic reasons, believing the media that they'd be doing humanitarian and infrastructural projects in Afghanistan and fulfill their national duty, only to be exposed to the horrors of grinding warfare in which senseless death ended not only human life, but the core ideology they'd previously clung to. It is a brutal, unflinching, dark yet breathtaking piece of work that haunts you long after you finish reading it.
Okay, Rog, you might remember last week I put in the wrist widget. I've had some terrible problems with my wrists.
We've had a lot of emails.
Oh, thank you so much to the GFOPs who wrote in with your advice. Many of you wrote in with advice to get massages, go and see a certain doctor.
I've been rubbing it.
Get some tests. So many recommendations. I thank you so much. But there seems to be a general theme that I've got to strengthen my wrists. And quite accidentally, I came up with a solution that already seems to be working because of my other love, Rog, juicing. And I've decided to do some manual juicing. You know, I own many juicing...
for our other podcast, juicing today.
I know. I own many juicing machines. I own NutriBullets. I own all kinds of different juicers.
You're always juicing.
But this week, I ordered from Amazon a PrepWorks by Progressive Dome Lid Citrus Juicer. It's just a fantastic juice. I enjoy
it. Looks like Michael Bradley.
In the morning. I find that it does look a bit like Michael Bradley. In the morning, I enjoy grapefruit, but I sometimes find the effort you've got to put into the slicing and dicing and cutting of a grapefruit too much. Pretty much, grapefruits are the perfect size right now. They're a little bit smaller, certainly the organic ones at this point in the winter. I like cutting them in half, whapping them straight on the Prep Works by Progressive Juicer.
Can you define the word whapping?
Whap, just putting it on, slapping it on, whapping it on, and giving it a good twist. I'm doing it with both hands, Rog. It is that movement, the sort of grinding of grapefruits on the juicers. It's really helping me out.
It's strangely erotic.
Helping my vitamin C intake, helping my wrists. Oh. The Prep Works by Progressive Dome Lid Citrus Juicer. Even if you don't like citrus, do it for your wrists.
The artisanal juicer, the onanist cure.
It's nothing to do with onanism, Rog. Okay. Other ways to connect to us. You can watch entire episodes of our crap TV show on NBC Sports Live Extra, Apple TV and Roku. It's also up on our website, meninblazers.com.
We're back this Monday at 11:30. Don't watch.
Also, the next day. Also on meninblazers.com. There's a place to sign up for our newsletter, The Raven, which we produce with our partner Guinness. We've got a Spotify account, men_in_blazers. We've got a Wikispaces, meninblazers.wikispaces.com. We've got a Twitter, at Men in Blazers, at Rog Bennett, at Embassy Davies, and Instagram, at Men in Blazers, and at Embassy_Davies. And we've also got a Facebook account. We've got a subreddit, meninblazers.reddit.com, maintained by GFOP's Akshay, Calvin, and Alex. You can always send your ravens to the crap part of Soho. You can always email us, if you don't have a raven, at meninblazers@gmail.com. Vendorpunk Rog.
War Pig.
Who wants to sex Matumbo?
Explosion.
Courage.
Take that, Gloria.
Is that your analysis?
To Tweed.
Abrigado, rock on, mate.
Kung Fu Fighting America.
Love you, Rog.
LTD, Davo.
Ah, LTD.